You're listening to Equip Season 5, Understanding and Interpreting the Bible. This is Week 4, Old Testament History, taught by John Davis, Midtown member and PhD candidate in Old Testament. This week's participants are Andrew and Kristen Gish and LeVar Allen. You're on Session 3.
In the Old Testament, there are many different types of literature or genres that are used to describe past events, more than we could possibly cover in this one teaching session. So instead of trying to cover them all, I want us to focus on one of the main kinds of literature used to do this, historical narrative. Historical narrative passages describe past events through telling a story. So examples of historical narrative would be stories from the lives of the patriarchs in Genesis, or stories in the book of Judges, stories from the life of David in 1 and 2 Samuel. That's what we're talking about. In the Old Testament, we see these individual episodes that are clearly self-contained stories while also being connected to their surrounding context. These stories typically involve tension and release. There's some sort of conflict within them that is addressed. So our question in this session is, how should we approach interpreting these kind of stories, and how can they challenge, encourage, and instruct us as Christians? Before I give some specific pointers for reading Old Testament historical narrative passages, I want to give a couple pieces of overarching advice. The first one is this: read historical narrative passages as stories because they are stories. One scholar asks, what does it mean to approach the Bible as literature? It means, first of all, to be sensitive to the experiential side of the Bible. It means to resist the tendency to turn every biblical passage into a theological proposition. As though this is what the passage exists for. So I want you to consider, God could have given us a list of clear, concise summary statements about all the main topics we find in the Bible. So who he is, what son is, who we are, who Jesus is. He could have listed everything out in abstract form like that, but he didn't. Instead, he chose to give us all sorts of different kinds of literature to read, reflect on, study, and discuss. He gave us stories, poetry, letters, the list goes on. With this in mind, what I first want to suggest to you is that in many ways, we should read individual historical narrative passages in the same way that we read most stories. Maybe that seems like stating the obvious to you, or maybe it strikes you as irreverent, but here's the thing. I think sometimes we overcomplicate reading stories in the Bible because we feel like we need to read the Bible in a completely unique way. Now, to be clear, the Bible is special and unique, of course. I'm not arguing against that. It's a divinely inspired collection of books written across thousands of years that nevertheless makes up a coherent whole, telling a story of redemption that culminates in the gospel of Jesus Christ. However, the Bible is also partially made up of individual stories, stories that feature all the sorts of things we're used to seeing in stories, like a setting, characters, dialogue, plot development. We're familiar with all these components of a story, and I think when we're reading normal books, quote normal, like the Harry Potter series, we naturally default to enjoying them for what they are, as stories. So we soak in the details, we daydream about the characters, we feel the suspense, and we anticipate the resolution. We don't read the stories with the sole intent of getting to the end so that we can ask ourselves, all right, now, how will I boil down everything I just read into a single propositional statement? What's the main point of the book? No, we don't do that. We feel the stories. We experience them. Before finding a lesson in a story or identifying its main themes, we first immerse ourselves in experiencing the story. We should approach Old Testament stories in the same way. Of course, we should read the stories in the Bible as more than just good stories, but we shouldn't read them as less than good stories. That's my point. So hand in hand with everything I just said, I want to also offer you this general principle. When reading a historical narrative passage from the Old Testament, start by seeking to understand the story in front of you in its original context. So before any text is fulfilled in Jesus Christ and the realities of the new covenant, it meant something in its original historical and literary context to its original hearers or readers. Resist the urge to immediately jump to Christ in an attempt to find a way to make an Old Testament text feel relevant to your Christian walk. Too often, this will only lead to reading the story poorly. Applying a story to your life as a Christian is an important step, but it should only come after understanding the story in its original context. So now I want to move into a section where I'm just going to give you a bunch of principles or pointers for how to interpret historical narrative passages from the Old Testament. But the first thing I want to say before I start with all those is that there is no silver bullet method for interpreting stories. By its very nature, a story is more ambiguous than, say, an essay or an epistle. Leland Ryken, professor of English at Wheaton College, gets at this reality when he writes, "Literature always calls for interpretation. It expresses its meaning by a certain indirection. The statement that our neighbor is anyone whom we encounter in need of our help is direct and requires no interpretation. By comparison, Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan requires a reader to determine what the details in the story add up to." So keeping the relative ambiguity of stories in mind, now I'm going to offer a number of strategies that I recommend you incorporate. And bear in mind that this list is by no means exhaustive. It could go on a really long time. The first is to read the story multiple times, or at least once slowly. And this is pretty obvious why this would be helpful. If you read a story multiple times, you're going to pick up things that you would have missed if you only read it once. Or if you read it slowly, you're going to pick up on things and make connections in a way that you wouldn't if you read it super fast. Especially when it comes to Old Testament stories that we're familiar with, things that should amaze us or shock us or disturb us or delight us tend to have a far more muted impact than they should. Sometimes an Old Testament passage is so familiar to us that it doesn't have the impact that it should on us. So for example, the beginning of the book of Jonah should be shocking to us. God tells Jonah, "Get up, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because their evil has come up before me." And then the text says, Jonah got up to flee to Tarshish from the Lord's presence. This is wild, a totally unexpected response from a prophet of God. This response by Jonah to God's call shocks and immediately hooks us as a reader, setting up the rest of the story that follows, or at least it should. When reading an Old Testament story, I want to encourage you to slow down, read intentionally, and really try to imagine that you're hearing the story for the first time. The second principle is to consider the setting of the story. Take note of the time and place or places in which a story occurs, because sometimes these are important factors. For example, the beginning of the book of Ruth reads, "During the time of the judges, there was a famine in the land. A man left Bethlehem in Judah with his wife and two sons to stay in the territory of Moab for a while." At least two things stand out to me from this introduction. First is the time of the judges refers to the era of Israel's history described in the book of Judges. In short, it was a time marked by rebellion against God and the chaos that ensued as a result. Therefore, if I'm familiar with that book of the Bible, as a reader, I am on edge right off the bat, and I might well expect the story told in Ruth to be a disturbing one. Now, as it turns out, Ruth's story is a happy one overall. She's remarkable in her devotion, and Boaz is a laudable figure. So in a way, the introduction is a bit misleading. It sets us up as readers, but it does so in such a way that a certain amount of tension is introduced into our minds right from the outset. The second thing that it makes me think is the time of the judges describing this awful time in Israel's history, it kind of makes me lean in the direction of viewing this man's decision to uproot his family and go to Moab in a negative light. After all, this was a time marked by lawlessness and rebellion against God. I could be wrong about that, but that's where the ambiguity of stories comes in. I do think that's probably a right way to lean. It's an example of how the setting of a story can give you a clue on which to latch onto and interpret the story in a particular way. The third pointer is to identify the characters and what you know about them, both from this particular story and elsewhere. When you're trying to get a handle on a character, consider the following questions. How is the character described in the story? Does the character say anything in the story? What does the character do or not do? Does the narrator tell you anything about the inner thoughts or motivations of the character? As an example, you may remember that when King Saul was pursuing David out of jealousy and anger, David twice had an opportunity to harm Saul, but he didn't take advantage of it on either occasion because he so revered Saul as God's anointed king. On the first such occasion, we read in 1 Samuel 24, "When Saul came to the sheep pens along the road, a cave was there, and he went in to relieve himself. David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave, so they said to him, 'Look, this is the day the Lord told you about. I will hand your enemy over to you so you can do to him whatever you desire.' Then David got up and secretly cut off the corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, 'As the Lord is my witness, I would never do such a thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed. I will never lift my hand against him since he is the Lord's anointed.'" David's words here to his men, as well as the fact that the narrator tells us David's conscience bothered him, tell us what kind of a man David is. This is a man of integrity. David cares more about living faithfully before God than getting the upper hand over his enemies at all costs. That's the takeaway. Of course, there's more to David's story, or there's more to David's life than what's recorded in this Old Testament story. He, too, is shown to be deeply flawed. But within the context of this story, that is the characterization of David. The fourth pointer is to take note of anything that's repeated. Oftentimes, specific details mentioned in an Old Testament story turn out to be important, but not always. Sometimes they just seem to be there to add color to the story. Repeated details, on the other hand, are almost always important to understand a story. For example, a phrase might be repeated that is important to the overall theological message of a story. In the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife in Genesis 39, which ultimately leads to Joseph being unjustly imprisoned, we read four times that the Lord was with him. The Lord was with Joseph, underscoring the fact that Joseph's success, whether managing the household of a high-ranking Egyptian officer or taking on a leadership role in prison, was ultimately owing to God's blessing, not to his own personal abilities. The fifth pointer is to pay attention to any dialogue. Old Testament stories are sometimes very short. In the case of a short story, there might be almost no dialogue. So when characters do speak, we need to pay attention. And when God speaks, it's particularly important to pay attention to what he says, because oftentimes that's the key to the meaning of a story. Sixth, think about the plot structure of the story. The arrangement of a story is not random. It reflects the deliberate design of the story's author. Sometimes there's conflict in a story and we genuinely don't know how it's going to work out. And other times we're told the outcome in advance, but still we feel the suspense because we're curious to see how things are going to work out. For example, you may remember that after Abraham and Sarah have their son, Isaac, Sarah insists on sending Hagar and her son Ishmael away. The text tells us God relieves Abraham's distress over the situation by telling him, "Whatever Sarah says to you, listen to her, because your offspring will be traced through Isaac, and I will also make a nation of the slave's son, because he is your offspring." So we as readers know that God has determined to provide for and protect Hagar and Ishmael, but we nevertheless still care to see how the story plays out. And in the process, we learn something about God's compassionate character by hearing the end of the story and how he speaks to Hagar. Seventh, consider the surrounding literary context of the story. It would be really fun to break down this pointer in detail with an extended example, but we don't really have time for that. So suffice it to say, what comes before and after a story in the Old Testament matters for its interpretation. The books of the Bible are carefully organized and reflect deliberate design. And as an example, I would recommend you read Genesis 12, 10 through 20. This is the story of Abram and Sarai's sojourn in Egypt. And I would recommend you read that passage in the light of God's promises to Abram in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. In this story, there's a tension between God's promise to protect Abram and Abram's level of trust in that promise, or the lack of it. Nevertheless, despite Abram's shortcomings, we see that God does protect and bless Abram through the experience, which tells us something as readers about how the power of God's promises stacks up against the reality of our imperfections. Eighth, this is the last pointer, consider the story at the covenantal historical level. Basically, what that means is whenever you read a story, you should ask yourself, where does this story fall on the timeline of God's dealings with humanity? What covenants has God made that precede the story, and how might they be relevant? On the other hand, what hasn't happened yet? Oftentimes, requirements of the Mosaic Law are meant to affect how we read a particular story. So, for example, when we get to the part of 1 Kings, where King Solomon's wealth and prosperity is described, our ears should perk up at the mention of his many horses imported from Egypt and his many foreign wives, since the book of Deuteronomy explicitly forbids these things of Israel's king. We are meant to make that connection as readers. As always, when reading historical narrative passages, remember that description is not necessarily prescription. In other words, just because a story in the Bible describes something doesn't necessarily mean that God approves of it. That would be a principle that could apply to lots of the Bible, lots of the narrative in the Bible. All right, now that we've covered some pointers for how to read Old Testament stories in their original context, we're ready to consider how these stories relate to Christ. The first thing to note is that every story of the Old Testament can be seen to point to Jesus in some sense. What I mean by that is that all Old Testament stories reflect the broken, sinful condition of humankind and the fallen world in which we live. We all sin and we all suffer in the world. These aspects of a story present us with an opportunity to consider our need for God to intervene on our behalf and to save us, both from ourselves and from the forces in the world that mean to do us harm. God's ultimate solution to overcome human sin and his ultimate answer to human suffering is found in the person and work of his Son, Jesus Christ. Jesus explains that he came to seek and to save the lost. Colossians 1:19 through 20 says, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile everything to himself, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." And earlier in that same chapter, Paul writes, "He, that is God the Father, has rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of the Son he loves. In him we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins." All Old Testament stories, this is the point, all Old Testament stories point to Jesus in the sense that they reflect something of our fallen condition that we need saving from. Second, the stories of the Old Testament put flesh and bones on ideas and truths, as well as instructions that we encounter elsewhere in Scripture, such as the following. First, abstract descriptions of what God is like. So we read in the Bible that God is compassionate and gracious in a passage like Exodus 34, 6 through 7, but we're able to see these attributes played out in a moving way in the story where God helps Hagar, an Egyptian slave who is mistreated by none other than the esteemed patriarch Abram and his wife Sarai. Similarly, directives for Christian living are fleshed out by stories. So, for example, in Romans 12, 17, Paul instructs the church in Rome, "Do not repay anyone evil for evil." This reminds us of Jesus' teaching to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Now, merely hearing these instructions is good and helpful, and it might even be moving to us. But seeing them play out in the actual story of a person's life is uniquely powerful, I would contend. For me, I think of the story of Joseph in Genesis chapters 37 through 50. As second in command of all of Egypt, Joseph had the chance to fully repay his brothers and then some for what they had done to him when, years after selling him into slavery, they showed up to Egypt hoping to buy food in the midst of a famine. Instead, Joseph forgives them and comforts them with these words, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You planned evil against me. God planned it for good to bring about the present result, the survival of many people." These flesh and bone stories are able to inspire us and to stir our emotions in a way that abstract statements of truth and straightforward commands are not as likely to accomplish. Dale Ralph Davis, who is a pastor and an Old Testament professor, puts it like this. Some Bible readers may wonder why David couldn't simply say, "God answers prayers," or why Nahum couldn't be content with, "The Lord is majestic." Why do they have to go on and take us through the universe and back? Because they not only want to inform you of God's might and majesty, but impress you with his might and majesty. And they likely know that to do that, they need to give you not only facts for your brain, but pictures for your imagination. In this way, then, the stories of the Old Testament are a source of instruction and correction and encouragement for us as we seek to walk in step with the Spirit imitating Christ. As we wrap up, I think it's important to remember once again that it takes time to develop skill in anything. We don't become masters of any new thing we set our minds to learn overnight. So with that in mind, if anything we just discussed is new to you, I would encourage you to make it your aim to incorporate it into your reading of Old Testament stories and just hone the craft over time as we continue to read and reread the Bible. Any questions or thoughts you guys have about that, about the topic of reading historical narrative in the Old Testament?
One of the rules you pointed out, I think is good, and we probably heard it before. I remember Jamal mentioned it in preaching is, this is description, not prescription. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really something because you read a lot and sometimes we could be tempted to find how, that's applying to me or maybe it's something similar, that you experience someone else maybe going through and it's like, oh, so that's what you should do then, or that's what's going to happen because of this. But in reality, this is not saying go do this or, this is an answer for whatever else. It's just describing something.
Right.
And then, hopefully we can get the proper you know, implications from that and understand what's being, you know, what's being relayed to us.
Yeah, making the jump from description to prescription is difficult. It is an art as much as it's a science, I would say, probably yeah. more so, which is kind of why these are pointers and there is just that ambiguity to stories. But the description, not necessarily prescription thing, I think is huge for apologetic purposes. I mean, I've heard so many times from people who aren't saved, you know, I could never worship a God like that who you know, sanctions this. Mm-hmm. And who knows what they're thinking of, but they may very well be describing something that God would never sanction. You know, it's describing what happened. Just because something's described in the Bible doesn't mean that it is what God, doesn't mean it's his revealed will for us right. as his sons and daughters. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge practical impact to recognizing that distinction, because I think that's a stumbling block for a lot of people who are lost and don't know how to relate to scripture and they find it offensive, you know,
yeah. mm-hmm.
because they don't make that crucial distinction.
Mm-hmm. It's like you can learn from other people's stories, you know,
yeah.
like, you know, hopefully you do that. Like someone's teaching you this so that you don't go that route. I'm not saying you need to go this route to come out on the other side to have something that you overcame, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think what has really helped me, because one of the things that you said was trying to read the like the one of the books to the fullest to kind of see like what it means. But sometimes it's hard when there's like in Genesis, there's 50 chapters, you know, and that's one of the more, I feel like, entertaining Old Testament history books that are longer. But I know in most study Bibles, they have outlines. And so those outlines really has helped me to be like, okay, this is talking about from like Adam and Eve to Abraham and, you know, just breaking it apart to make it a little bit more mentally understandable, if that makes sense. But yeah, so.
And with Genesis, I would make the case that so many of the stories do all relate back to these original promises of God to Abram in Genesis 12, 1 through 3, to bless him, to protect him, to make him into a great nation, to bless all the nations of the earth through his offspring. A lot can be tied back to that, to those promises. And when you start to think about it in that light, or to make other connections based on what you're reading, you know, in a study Bible or a commentary, it kind of opens your eyes to the brilliance of the design of these books. Mm-hmm. I think at a cursory glance, they seem, and especially like the prophets, I know we're not doing the prophets, but like a book like Isaiah or Jeremiah is like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The literary structure is so key, but it definitely does take some work, some research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the other point I really enjoyed too. It's just the fact like historical narrative is framed up in a way that kind of engages your creative faculties. Like, and just, you know, we serve a God who is a creator, right? Yeah. But like, you know, we said that Jesus tells all his stories and parables, right? But like to be able to just read through historical narrative and just be able to contextualize things and get your mindset in a position where like what are they thinking at the time, and not just a matter, because like it was very true to say like what you said earlier on, just like God could have just put a bullet list together and be like, Adam came, he did this, he failed, and like, you know, this, and just very unengaging.
Yeah.
But be able to for Moses and those authors be able to put it in a way where it's kind of like in yeah, just a historical narrative, a story, right? Definitely engages your senses more and gets more of the personal, I don't know, like in a way that's more engaging than just like, here are the facts and that's it, right?
Absolutely. And even if we're in a part of scripture where we do just hear the facts and we meditate on it, we're moved by it, I wonder how much of that is subconsciously informed by these stories that we know, you know, mm-hmm. like they are ingrained in us.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when we're not intentionally thinking of them, we're still operating from a place of like, I know this is true about God. Why do you know that's true about God? Because of this story, you know, so much of it, like, I think it is foundational and kind of a beautiful picture of how God condescends to speak to us at our level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows our frame. He knows that we need that, I think. Like we're built for that. Yeah.
Yeah.